Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. Got my co-host, Dr. Carl, and we're bringing back the sexiest doctor there ever was, Dr. Sean Wharton. He is just amazing. We had him a couple months ago. It was just a lovely time talking. But in the meantime, we talked about it before, the OASIS 4 trial, that higher dosed oral semaglutide, as Dr. Wharton will say, it was semaglutide. We say semaglutide. That paper was finally published, a 25 milligram a dose of that. And so we're going to talk about that today. And on top of that, our lovely, amazing Canadian doctor, who's a clinical trialist as well, was also lead author on the orforglipron. That's a mouthful. The small molecule GLP-1 receptor agonist by Eli Lilly, competing. He's chilling out for all these places. We got Eli Lilly, we got Novo Nordisk, and I'm sure there's some NDAs in there where he can't discuss all the other places he's working with. But he was the lead author on this ATTAIN-1 trial, which was the orforglipron, which we're really excited to also talk about. And so we got a couple of oral options coming out. My brother prefers oral, so I think we're going to be talking about that.
Dear God.
Sean's like, all right. I got to get off.
Hey, at least we can't get fired anymore, since we're our own bosses now.
Okay. So anyway, thanks for coming back. Thanks for coming back on the podcast. You are the lead author, so it's really cool to get you on here to make some commentary and talk about these drugs. So, thanks for coming back on.
Absolutely, no problem. They're saying that really 2026 is the year of oral therapy for weight management. That this is historical. It's going to change things.
Amazing.
Yeah, this is exciting.
That's so cool. All right, so let's start with the OASIS 4. Those top line results were out like a year ago, and finally it's published. So can you go through that a little bit?
Yeah. So it's great. So OASIS 4 is the oral semaglutide study. So when we think about this, it came out in the fall of last year. So we got published much, much later, and that's the way things go sometimes in the publications. And there's reasons for that, and whatever the case is. But it's actually here now. So I think the important part of this molecule is that it's a large protein, and it is a synthetic protein, just like insulin is a protein. You usually can't give proteins as an actual pill. You can. But here, because insulin is a really big molecule and GLP-1s are a little smaller, they figured out a way to put this little smaller protein into a snack molecule, put it through the gut and get it into the bloodstream. The amount that got into the bloodstream was very little. It was 1 to 4%. So if you take a 100 milligram pill, you're getting 1 to 4 milligrams in the bloodstream. That other 96 milligrams gets expelled out.
Yeah.
So that's where you have to think of this. This is a new concept called API, which is the active pharmaceutical ingredient. How much does it take to make the pill? So if you're making a 25 milligram pill, it takes 25 milligrams of whatever to make that 25 milligram pill. 0.25 milligrams to 1 milligram gets into the bloodstream. 0.25 to 1 milligram is exactly the amount we give with an injection. So it actually worked out, right? You had to give 10 times the amount to get to the amount in the bloodstream that's similar to the injectable molecule. And funny enough, the result came out similar to what we got with the injectable molecule. So that was a really good study and really smart design of this molecule.
That's cool. Everybody, to remind everybody, you are formally trained in pharmacology, a pharmacist, a PharmD, right?
Correct. Doctor in pharmacy, yeah.
Very cool. So you're perfect for this. And so, yeah, basically this little peptide protein gets broken down by our stomach acid because it's just like when you cook egg whites and kind of But actually, that improves the bioavailability of egg whites. But whereas this, it would just get broken down. We wouldn't absorb in any of it, but apparently 10% of it. But with the special snack thing that changes the pH locally in your stomach, right?
Correct. And so normally, because the molecule is not that huge, it's small enough to be able to put into this snack molecule, all of it doesn't get broken down and all of it doesn't get doesn't end up getting expelled out. A little bit reconstitutes and goes into the bloodstream. So 1-4%. And that 1-4% resulted in what we saw, which was pretty good results.
Yeah. And now I just want to give a little bit of background or discuss a little bit of background is that this exact medication has actually been approved for type 2 diabetes for over like 6 years. Rybelsus is the brand name of oral semaglutide at 3, 7, and 14 milligrams that was approved in 2019 for type 2 diabetes and has recently even shown the expected good cardiovascular outcome reduction similar to the injectables.
Right. Yes. So we're seeing really good things from an oral molecule. This oral molecule, interestingly enough, is not easy to take. You have to take it in the morning with 4 ounces of water, not 5, not 3, exactly 4 ounces of water. Separate it from food, separate it from other medications such as vitamins, etc., because that bioavailability or how much gets in the bloodstream is so small that anything that interferes with it will make that go down even further. So that's why it's so important to take it in such a judicious fashion. And it's a big deal to make this actual molecule. It's not easy to actually make it. It's not as hard as making the injectable, putting it into a canister and injecting it. So it's still easier, still more possible, but there's still some challenges. But it definitely works and has been around for a number of years. And we see within some countries, it's the Rybelsus molecule is a big deal. A lot of people use it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because, ever since it was approved in 2019, obviously the company Novo has always been like, this is going to be a big deal for, primary care, type 2 diabetes, endocrinology, et cetera. But I'll tell you, I'll give you a little bit of anecdotal evidence from, I guess, most endocrinologists is that we tend to not use it that much, actually, because of those barriers that you mentioned, the oral availability that, having to take it on an empty stomach. And we deal so much with thyroid medicine already in kind of a similar vein. And we actually have historically in our experience figured out that most people tend to just do okay with the weekly injectables over the daily oral Rybelsus, to be honest.
Most of my patients have said they would absolutely prefer a weekly injection, but there are once in a while some needle phobic patients. Do you do the Rybelsus first, then their Synthroid 30 minutes later, then make them eat about 30 to 60 minutes later?
To be honest, I don't know that I have anybody who's on both because it's too much of a...
I had that question.
Too much of a pain in the back.
I had that question. Yeah. I said I would do Rybelsus or the semaglutide or as Dr. Warren says, semaglutide first, then wait the 30 minutes, then the Synthroid, then eat. But that's why it's such a pain.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It would be an individual decision with the patient. I'd convince him to do the shot to be honest.
Was that an exclusion or inclusion criteria, the hypothyroidism, taking thyroid replacement?
No, not as far as I know. I don't remember it being an exclusion. Okay. And then we would have just made sure that the instructions were actually clear. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember it being an exclusion, but I'd have to double check.
What were the results of this OASIS for? Like just kind of overall.
The results were when you looked at the intention to treat analysis or what we call the treatment regimen estimand. That's the results that aren't quite as high as the other results. So we got about 13.6% weight change after 64 weeks. And if we look at, if you were on the treatment, you're taking the drug, like at the end of the actual trial, people didn't even have to go all the way to the end, but you were on treatment. We took all of those results. It was about 16.6% decrease in weight. So that's kind of not far from where the injectable was.
Similar to Wegovy. Okay.
And did we talk in the first podcast about how we ended up with the 25 instead of the 50? Because the first couple of the phase, I think they were phase two trials.
It was Oasis 1.
Oasis 1
was 50.
Oasis 1 was 50. And this is not a lot lower in the amount of weight loss with it, but much better side effect profile, I think.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a lot of it is also because of the API. Like I said, imagine you're making a 50 milligram pill versus a 25 milligram pill. That's a lot of product for the 50. It's double the amount for the 25. And if your results are going to be not that far away, right, in terms of weight change, they're going to be just like 1% difference. Once you start get to these higher doses, we don't see that much of a difference in terms of the efficacy. So if you're a company, you may want to decide on which one you want. Do you want to spend a lot of money to make a 50 milligram pill, or do you want to spend a little bit more to make a little bit less to make a 25 milligram, and the weight result is relatively similar, if not the exact same? So I think that there was lots of decisions that went into this, and I don't know what they are because I'm just the trialist. But I think it was good. I think it's really good decision making. 25 milligrams is a good dose, and I can see this being used, yeah. And you needed the 25 milligrams. You can't take 2 14s. That's too expensive because the price is going to be, you want to take a 25 milligram tablet. Who's this for? Is it for all the G7 countries? Is it for other countries? Is it for places where, I think that the ability to have choice and be able to expand to different populations is what this really did for us. I don't exactly know where it's going to go, but I know that it's going to give more choice. And I feel like the 3, 7, and 14 milligram in type 2 diabetes, what we've seen with it is not exactly what we're going to see with oral semaglutide 25 milligrams for obesity. I just think it feels like it's going to be different. I don't know, but
when
I
you think there's that, what do you mean?
I think the uptake is going to be greater.
The usage
would be more interesting.
I agree. No, I agree. And I think because it's, one, it's going to spread the net out wider, more indications. And so much of what we're dealing with is cost. So if this can help bring some costs down with higher production amounts and, the demand, et cetera. I think you're right. I absolutely do.
Were there any side effects that were, this is different from the injection? Wasn't it the allodynia that people were talking about? Was that a different one?
Dysesthesia, right. The allodynia dysesthesia. And funny enough, we saw that more within the Step Up trial where we give an injectable at a much, much higher dose. So yeah, it was here too, but it wasn't at the rates where we were really super worried about it, which is nice.
That's cool. So for anybody, it's feeling like your skin's like sensitive and almost like you have a sunburn.
Crawling.
Yeah. Tingling and I have sunburn and like a little pain. If you touch your skin, it's more painful than what you would normally feel.
I've had patients with that, even on lower doses, kind of interesting. Okay, so then let's move on to the orforglipron and Attain 1. Could you explain the difference between one of these long peptide chain GLP-1 receptor agonist versus a small molecule GLP-1 receptor agonist?
Yeah. So, and these are this is the important part here is that the peptides are large molecules. They are synthetic molecules that look like the hormone. They're analogs, which means look like, mimics the actual hormone. Now here, the small molecules are also synthetic, but chemicals that don't look like the hormone at all. They just activate the receptor. They go into the receptor, they activate it, and they end up working. A lot of times, these receptors only like the hormone or the analog of the hormone, something that's nice and big and chunky, like insulin. insulin, there's no agonist that actually works in the insulin receptor, only insulin-like molecules, big proteins. But for some reason, the GLP-1 accepted a small molecule, and it actually worked. Why is that super important? Because of this concept of the API. You give a 12 milligram tablet and 12 milligram gets into the bloodstream. It doesn't get broken down. And I mean, it's not quite 12 milligrams. It's smaller, but it's really close. Like, so we're talking bioavailabilities in like between 70 to the 100% range, right? It's a very, very different. And because of that, you don't have to separate it from food. You don't have to separate it from the time of day. It doesn't have to be with a certain amount of water. You're not worried about that component of it. And you can potentially make it cheaper. Again, comes mm-hmm. back to this API. How much product are you using to make an actual product? So you can potentially make it cheaper. All of these are potentials, but I think that both of these molecules again are going to change things. There'll be some countries that work well with oral semaglutide. They just get it. The country likes that molecule. They get the product easier. Everyone's using it. Other places will be orforglipron, the smaller molecule, and they end up getting it. There'll be differences in what people want to take, what insurance covers. But I see this as a turning point for weight management, as people now have the option to have two oral medications when they eventually come. They may come at similar times, hopefully, and it'll be interesting.
Yeah, so you probably don't have insight. You might. You're not allowed to. If you do,
I don't.
Okay,
I don't
look at that. That's an honest answer. Look at that. Honest Sean Warren, Dr. Warren. There, you love it.
It's much easier when they don't tell me anything.
I know you're got to go. I don't know.
He doesn't have a choice. Right. He doesn't know.
Yeah, we're not good liars either. So okay.
Well, let's talk
give
about
us the results. What are the results of the right.
Orgothon? So the results is, and there's always two sets of results. As I said previously, the two sets of results with the oral semaglutide was 13.6% weight loss is 16.6. And so here we had 11.2 and 12.4.
Okay.
Okay, those are the two numbers, 11.2 and 12.4 over 72 weeks. And so initially go, whoa, 12.4, what's that going to bring? That's not 15, that's not 20, that's not 25. 12.4 is a lot of weight loss that can be sustained.
Yeah, people don't realize.
Sustain 12.4% of your weight down over a long period of time, you are doing well. So that's why I think that when we presented this, there wasn't necessarily oohs and ahs for the 12.4%, but there was a ooh and ah for this molecule. It's going to make a difference.
Yeah. I think so. Now, and to that note, I mean, you know, when I'm looking at the categorical weight loss, which I'm a big fan of because it really shows, well, how many people on average are getting over that 10%, which is really our new standard for saying that's a good response to therapy, and then 15%. I mean, around 50% of people are getting over that 10%.
That's great.
I love two different higher doses. Yeah. And then over a third of people on the high dose were getting over 15%. So if this is like a, you know, if we think about this as an easier, more cost-effective therapy, I think this could be a huge deal when it's out.
Right. Right. Categorical weight loss is such a great thing to actually talk about. And here we saw, as you said, greater than 50% of patients getting to greater than 10%. If you think 10% weight loss is important, then this is important for you. And 10% weight loss is important. We start to get those greater metabolic changes that we actually want. And so, and the big deal about this is that, you know, you can get 10% by starving yourself and really trying to go to the gym and et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't take away the food noise. It's not sustainable. It's not something that you can do when you have a broken leg or you twisted your ankle or you are sad and you can't get to the gym. This is something you can get 10% regardless of what you do, but even if things are difficult, even if things are a struggle in that lifestyle world, you could do the lifestyle easier. So I think those are the things, those are the tenets that made it a really important finding.
Yeah.
And relatively good side effect profile, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just kind of looking at the percentages of, you know, nausea. I mean, all these medications have really high percentage of people getting some nausea, et cetera. But the percentages of people dropping out of the study, I always think is an important number because it says, hey, when people are being forced to go up, which we don't have to do in the real world, by the way, but when they're being forced to titrate up, how many actually drop out due to adverse events? And I'm kind of looking at my screen down here, but it's not that high. It's like,
wasn't that
10%, like single digits.
Correct. Correct. It was about 5 to 10% of people dropping out for adverse the adverse events. And then when it came to the GI adverse events, it was about 7% of people.
What was OASIS for with the semaglutide oral?
I don't remember.
Pull it up. Slide here a second.
Pull it up.
Yeah.
Because to me, practically,
I got it.
I would say that just the whole issue with drinking the little bit of fluid with the semaglutide, I think that's going to be a barrier. But
interestingly enough, it wasn't a barrier in the study.
Really?
Because it's a study. You know, people are like, interested in doing exactly what they're supposed to do in the study. So we didn't have a problem
It
there.
That's good to know.
It was actually pretty low percentages. So like 7% or so adverse events leading to discontinuation of the semaglutide.
Okay. That's pretty low. So they're both pretty low. I think these things have a good, we have these big guns coming out of these medicines, and it's like, A lot of these patients that I have that are kind of like a leaner PCOS and or patients that just have like not as much body mass to them, but just have, you know, cardiometabolic issues. We really don't need to get a massive amount of weight off. These are also really good options for that. I think accessibility, if I really hope Lily comes in and just goes, look, we're going to give this at $100 a month or something like that. Makes a big splash like that, it's gonna make a big deal. So we'll see.
We know they're listening, Lily.
We know Lily will be the pilot. We have some execs. But
one of the things that I'm really proud of in these studies is in the orforglipron study, they included 10% of patients with a BMI less than 30. So we don't see that very often in studies. And if you have a BMI less than 30, to get into the study, you have to have a disease. You have to have some kind of disease because otherwise you're not included in that 27 to 30 zone. So here we're treating people who deserve to be treated, who sometimes have been left aside in terms of just wanting to get healthy and wanting to be treated. And we focus on the higher BMIs on frequent basis, which is good. We need that too. But we also need to recognize that having a BMI of 28 and being unhealthy, and you're struggling, let's see what we can do in that field and in that zone. And that was a really positive thing.
And that goes back to this whole, 10%, 15% being good, or, in our new algorithm, we call them good and excellent response to therapy, because, we know that people with obesity-related or adiposity-related diseases such as fatty liver and type 2 diabetes, even if their BMIs are on the lower end, maybe even sarcopenic type obesity patients who, need to lift weights and beef up their muscle mass, 10% weight loss still shows all the metabolic health benefits in those populations.
Yeah. I think this is going to come down to cost. What's going to be adopted more? Whatever's cost less, we're going to go with it. So Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, you guys better like duke it out.
No way. Champions find a way.
That's real capitalism, here in America, not up in that socialized Canada where Dr. Wharton is.
And that's funny. I think that those decisions are really big, tough decisions, and as a researcher, as someone doing clinical medicine, as a researcher in particular, we really like to see this great science, like the ability to put a big protein into a snack molecule. That's like
cool.
That is like a Nobel Prize winning type of science. Like, who it was able to do that. That's brilliant.
That is cool.
The ability to make a small chemical scaffolding and GLP-1 agonist and put it into the receptor, that's brilliant. So this was really exciting science that I think then the next steps of the implementation and how it ends up working out, those are steps that I don't have great insight into. I have some opinions, I have some thoughts, I have some hopes, I have some fingers crossed, but I certainly believe that the science for both of these molecules was really, really great. What we just started talking about is the GLP-1 has like different scaffolding. Two of the GLP-1 molecules were taken off of the market. They were Pfizer drugs, danuglipron and lotiglipron, because they caused increase in liver enzymes and some hepatic failure. They were a different scaffolding than what we see with the orforglipron molecule and some other GLP-1s that were. So the hope is that this off-target side effects, when we talk about off-target, the agonist is supposed to go into the GLP-1 receptor and it's supposed to stay there. But sometimes it hits a couple other things, a couple other targets. And sometimes those targets are okay. They don't cause much of an issue. Sometimes they cause a problem. So is this adverse effect, the hepatic issue, and it's an off-target effect? Certainly, it's off-target. Is it because of the scaffolding? Is it because of something else? Is this one going to be better and do positive things and not have that problem? So we didn't see the liver problems with this GLP-1 molecule. The next important thing, I'll flip back to oral semaglutide. Semaglutide itself is the most studied GLP-1 on the planet. It has shown benefit and benefit and benefit and benefit.
Yeah.
So now we're into the idea of an oral one that can maybe show benefit and benefit and benefit. So this has been an exciting week for two really good introductions to the obesity medicine space.
I think that's a good point. We know
that's interesting. It really does. Then. Yeah, I was going to say it has a real step up on the competition. No pun intended, I guess, from the semaglutide step up trial. But but the oral semaglutide, because of the history of being approved in 2019 for type 2 diabetes, the established glycemic benefits, and now the cardiorenal benefits that molecule has. I mean, it could sort of jump up in the oral realm of obesity medicine. Think about those who maybe don't have type 2 diabetes criteria, but have all those really high risk obesity related cardiometabolic diseases. They have heart disease, they have maybe they have MASH, fatty liver, they have some kidney disease. Suddenly that's a pretty darn highly touted oral medication that's probably close to being standard of care in the near future.
Yeah. What are they doing, CVOT trials on orforglipron? Hopefully some bigger thing.
It's called the SOUL trial, and it was in type 2 diabetes.
Okay. I'm
trying to remember.
That was semaglutide. He asked about orforglipron.
Orforglipron.
Orfor. You asked about Orfor. Yeah, yes. Maybe not ask that one.
We can't ask.
But yeah, you can imagine that when you're in this space, those are things that you need to actually do.
Very cool. What else? Oh, there are a lot of compounding pharmacies doing sublingual tirzepatide and semaglutide, and I've been telling. I mean, there is literally zero evidence to support that, and I have to go, this is a scam, this is a scam.
You can see me giggling and laughing.
Why wouldn't the PharmD lead author of a lot of these trials is laughing at that concept, by the way, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, this is what these compounding places do, and they're like pushing it online, and I'm just like, there is literally zero evidence to support. Why wouldn't Big Pharma make them sublingual and all these different things?
Right.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's sad that this type of thing happens. I mean, if you're going to advance science and you have a real scientific breakthrough and you're a biotech company, or you're doing good things, and there's a sublingual that's a possibility, or there's other compounds that are possibilities, then great. Let's talk science and research and helping people. But let's not talk about stealing people's money and fake and not. It's wrong to actually do this. No. If we want to talk about accessing access to care and advancing care so that multiple people can get it. Let's do that. Let's do that in a responsible, appropriate way, not scamming and stealing people's money and making they're doing the same thing that they did back 15, 20 years ago. They're building on people's hopes and they're capitalizing on it. And that's absolutely wrong.
Love it. Love that take.
And all right,
folks. Well, there you have it. There are the oral options that should be coming out in 2026. I'm excited. Dr. Wharton's excited. My brother's excited. We're all excited. It's a good time to be an obesity specialist doctor. If you have any friends or family or anybody else that's interested in doing the oral thing, since they're scared of needles, or maybe even potentially using these things for maintenance because they're cheaper, I'm not even sure. There's going to be all sorts of use cases that I think people are going to be switching back and forth depending on the cost. Make sure you share this podcast to know the differences and understand the pharmacology that Dr. Wharton explained with the snack molecules and the small molecules and all that stuff. Any last words, Dr. Wharton?
No, just happy to be here and happy to see that you guys spread the good news. You spread evidence, you know, in a real way that helps people. And you also, you know, you talk about what's actually happening in the field. That speaks to it. I after the last podcast we did, a bunch of people said, "I saw you on it. I heard you. It's great. It was so much fun. It was terrific."
Thanks.
So
all right, great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, we love you. You're just a wealth of information, and we really appreciate you coming on. Here's our outro, folks.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll